Blog Talk Radio.
Disproportionately women
who work at least 20 hours a week and depend on these earnings to make ends meet. At a time when persistent high unemployment is putting enormous downward pressure on wages, such a minimum wage increase would provide a much-needed boost to the earnings of low-wage workers. In recent years, there have been important developments in the academic literature on the effect of the increases in minimum wage unemployment, with the weight of evidence now showing that increases in the minimum wage have little or no negative effect on the employment of minimum wage workers, even during times of weakness in the labor market. Research suggests that minimum wage increase could have a small stimulus effect on the economy as low-wage workers spend their additional earnings, raising demand and job growth and providing some help on the jobs front. So let's get the minimum wage raised.
Okay. So, before we go, we're going to talk to you. Let's see. Anybody looking for a job? Well, here is. The TSA is now hiring. Now, of course, this is kind of fun, but here we go. Anybody looking for a job? This is by InfoWars. So, you will resist. TSA, we're hiring.
I don't care if he's in a wheelchair. Stand him up. Hello, I'm Richard Reed. You can call me Dick. Are you having trouble finding a job without a diploma or GED? Are you an unemployed, defrocked priest? Do you enjoy making children cry? Have you ever wanted to take an old man's pants off in public? Or are you simply tired of jobs that require you to think? If you answered yes to any of those questions, then we here at TSA may have the exciting new career opportunity that you've been waiting for.
Sit up.
Slam to the floor.
But if you touch my junk, I'm going to have you arrested.
With a base salary of $15 an hour, our employees enjoy perks you won't find anywhere else. Naps, half-hour-long bathroom breaks, and little to no supervision whatsoever. Plus, all the free water, shampoo, and grandma's applesauce you can handle. At TSA, we're dedicated to America and Americans. And in 10-plus years, we haven't caught a single terrorist. With a 0% success rate, we have nowhere to go but up. Help us help you. Apply online at www.infowars.com today. TSA, fondling millions of genitals every day. For your safety.
TSA, we're hiring. U.S. Department of Transportation.
Yeah, it's a bad business, isn't it?
Yeah. But I...
You are also reminded that any inappropriate remarks or jokes concerning security may result in your arrest. We appreciate your cooperation while these measures are in effect.
There you go, folks. Join the TSA.
It's so sad you have to make a joke of it.
Yeah.
Really sad.
Yeah. Fondle millions of genitals in your career. Become a priest. But anyway, that's kind of sad.
It is.
But, yeah. So, anyway, let's move on, folks, to bigger and better ideas.
I wanted to also comment on what's happened this week in West Virginia.
Weak
environmental laws. And they have a little comment on that. Common sense tells you don't put a hazardous chemical storage facility on the banks of a river. A little more than a mile upstream from a drinking water intake that serves more than 300,000 people downstream. So should the law, well, that doesn't make sense, downstream. But beyond basic common sense, state and federal environmental and safety and health rules should be in place to prevent such disasters as the recent West Virginia chemical spill that poisoned the drinking water of families downstream from a largely unregulated, uninspected, toxic chemical facility on the banks of the Elk River. Not only was Freedom Industries allowed to operate the facility, which stored millions of gallons of various so-called specialty chemicals in aging tanks along the river's banks, it had not been inspected by state or federal authorities since 2001, according to the Associated Press. When the leak occurred, it was neighbors company who alerted officials. West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection officials have said that their inspectors investigated the situation at Freedom on January 9th, not because of an alert from the company, but after neighbors complained of annoying chemical odor resembling that of licorice. The chemical industry and others in West Virginia have a long and successful history of fighting environmental and health and safety rules. But as the Coalition for Sensible Safeguards points out, the West Virginia water disaster is the latest in a series of environmental and safety disasters related to shortcomings in federal and state oversight that have been driven by a vociferous industry-funded anti-regulatory campaign. The public pays the price when the regulatory agencies don't have the legal tools and the funding to do their job. AFL-CIO Safety and Health Director Peg Samario says, the latest disaster has eerie echoes of the West Texas fertilizer explosion in March 2013. In both cases, regulation of the toxic chemicals involved were lacking, and there had been no oversight or inspections of the facility. In Charleston, citizens have had their lives upended for days, but thankfully there's been no loss of life. In West Texas, the damage was more devastating and long-lasting, with 15 emergency responders killed and hundreds of homes and businesses destroyed. She said the disaster points out the urgent need for stronger protection and greater oversight by state and federal authorities. This will only happen if citizens and workers come together and demand that their government take action to ensure safe water, clean air, and safe workplaces for all.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, that was such a serious crime, I think.
Well, there's more about, we'll get to it later, but fracking wells abandoned in boom bust cycle. Who will pay to cap them? New York Times. The companies that once operated the wells have all but vanished into the prairie, many seeking bankruptcy protection. Okay, all these hundreds of wells, thousands of fracking wells,
just left
and uncapped. You know, and it's like, recent estimates have put the numbers of abandoned drilling well operations in Wyoming at more than 1,200. And state officials said several thousand more might soon be orphaned by their operators. Wyoming officials now trying to address the problem amid concerns from landowners that the wells could contaminate groundwater and blight on the land. Amazing. It's cute. But anyway, I got a call. We got a call. You want to just finish that thing right here? This month, Governor Matt Mead proposed allocating $3 million to pay for plugging the wells and reclaiming the land around them. And the issue is expected to be debated during next year's legislative session as lawmakers seek to hold drilling companies accountable.
The downturn in natural gas prices has forced small operators out of business, and the problem has really accelerated over the last couple of years, said the governor's policy director, Sean Reese. Landowners would like their land to be brought back to productive status and have orphan wells cleaned up. Drilling companies in Wyoming typically lease land from the state, private owners of the Federal Bureau of Land Management, depending on who owns the mineralites. The state's Oil and Gas Conservation Commission already budgets $1 million a year to plug abandoned wells, and under the governor's proposal, the commission would appropriate another $3 million over the next 4 years. Hopefully, they do something.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
We've now
played. Hello.
Hey,
oh, there
Larry.
He is.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
Good, Leah. How you doing? Hi, Lila.
Hi, how are you? You sound
very
better.
Very well. Much better. Feeling better. Thank you.
Oh, good. It's awful to try to do a show when you have laryngitis, so I think it was...
Yeah, you've been there, huh?
Oh, yeah.
More than once.
Yes, but, more than once.
More than once.
Both from colds and laryngitis, and, you know, sometimes you just can't do it. I was wondering, did you listen to any of what Chris Christie had to say the other day? Actually,
yeah, I did. I was listening to it at work, and it was just so bizarre. Actually, I thought it was a fairly bizarre.
Yeah. It really was the state of the state, and people standing up and applauding things like for doing away with sick leave and doing away with other worker rights. It's just it's just amazing to me. I didn't quite understand this. By working away with tenure, teacher tenure,
It was a real attack on working people, I felt.
Oh, God.
Well, and I'm not glad this happened, but I think, I think it really revealed the guy's character. He's a bad guy, he's a mean guy, and he's certainly not a friend of the working class.
After everything's been exposed about this guy, suddenly his approval rating went from 80% to 56%. I mean, what do you got there? All Tony Sopranos in New Jersey or what?
Yeah. I just don't know, but can you the brashness of shutting down a major artery like that?
Wasn't that amazing? I just couldn't believe anybody would support anything so horrible. And seriously caused death in...
He did. There was actually one death.
Oh, there was?
Yeah, it's extraordinary. But, if people go to the Rolling Stone, recent Rolling Stone magazine, and they're doing some good articles, 2 issues ago, the Rolling Stone magazine has this article by Matt Taibbi, who's done so much good reporting on the financial meltdown and, the corporations. But at any rate, the article's called Apocalypse New Jersey, and it's about Camden, New Jersey, which is just an awful shape, right? One of the worst and most dangerous cities in America. And Christie has, starved that city. He has, as a penalty to some Democratic legislators, he's... suspended state aid to Camden, so he's made a bad situation worse. So, this is the Republican brand. I mean, these guys are very vindictive.
Political payback, too,
But you're playing with people's lives.
Yeah. And he's saying he's not a bully, you know?
Yeah, right. It's like an athlete says it's not about the money when he signs a contract.
Yeah,
I'm really looking forward to what those two that he fired are going to be up in front of Congress now next week.
Yeah, don't you get the feeling something bigger is going to break here?
I don't know, but the fact that anybody could look at that guy seriously as a presidential candidate is appalling, you know.
John Stewart had a funny line. He said, I don't want to offend anybody, he said, as soon as the news of the Bridgegate broke, Paul Ryan got a big hard-on out in Wisconsin.
Oh, that's probably true.
Oh, God.
he said, Stewart said you could hear the hard-on. So, it's going to be interesting when these Republicans begin the primary process, just how, they're all going to be trying to, be nastier than the other.
Look at the Republican candidates. Oh, my God.
They scare me.
They're absolutely.
I thought that Dick Cheney didn't have a heart, but Paul Ryan doesn't have one either. Oh, boy.
They're enthralled to the extremists, so it's going to be interesting. Sometimes I think the only thing rescuing the Democrats is the fact that these guys are, so not only mean-spirited, but, sort of stupid.
So bad.
What was it that Romney said about Christie? He couldn't even raise money in that state.
Christie wouldn't let him raise money in that state unless he
got
a piece of the pie, I guess. Yeah.
Right.
Without his say so.
We'll see. It's going to be, I don't want to say, this is serious stuff. We see what's happening with the unemployment insurance fight and everything else in Congress. I mean, the consequences of these knotheads cause are, grave to the country. But interesting stuff, no doubt about that.
We just read Trumka's statement on the unemployment benefits that he made yesterday. And about the Republicans. And it's a sick thing. It's a really, really sick
thing. Well, for some reason, they refuse to believe that increasing, giving people coverage or increasing the minimum wage has a benefit. They don't understand that. They just are so mean-spirited and stuck in that.
Yeah.
Looking at the benefit to everyone.
In the last month, they only made in December 74,000 jobs for the whole month in the entire country.
Right, right. You know, you've got structural long-term unemployment, and actually having unemployment insurance means at least people can buy things and pay some bills. So you know, it has the effect on the economy is positive. So
you know,
this mean-spirited is a good way to describe it, Lila.
Yeah, I read, last week, that for every dollar of unemployment insurance, it puts $1.55 into the economy.
Right, right.
Isn't that amazing?
Why would you, why would you cut it? You know, why would you put more people in desperation? Because, you know, as you guys know, the job, for example, in Connecticut, the jobless numbers, the unemployment numbers, I should say, would be, in excess of 10%, I read in the Connecticut Mirror, if they counted people who have given up looking for work. You know, they came off the unemployment rolls. And, you know, it's very difficult to find gainful, supporting kinds of employment. So, you know, you got to keep this benefit alive.
Oh, absolutely.
Actual unemployment statistics, real unemployment is about 36% in this country. 36%.
Oh, is that what you saw? Yeah.
That's
shocking. You know, if that's the case, that's worse than I thought.
Yeah. That's not even including the underemployment. All right.
That's a huge problem.
That's horrible. But the actual unemployment rate is 36%.
Based on
on the people that have quit. People that can't get jobs, people that are lost their benefits, and people that are, I believe for every one job, there's three applicants in this country. For every single job,
right. There's
three people that are applying for them. All right? And
wow.
And then these guys go along and say, oh, you know, we got to cut it because people have cut these unemployment benefits because people are screwing around. You know, they're not trying to get jobs, you know.
Well, burned me up about Christie's speech, you know, the State of the State that he gave.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he focused on union people taking advantage when they're sick and they're not really sick. And he was going to focus on that and get those people.
Going after the teachers' unions, going after
people on disability who don't deserve it.
That's the game. I mean, they're deflecting and distracting because they're the spokespeople of the rich and the powerful and the corporations, and they want to have you believe that working people and unions are somehow the cause of everything that's going wrong.
Yeah. And talk about kicking the people who are already down, though. I mean, that's what just, you know, what kind of people do that? I mean, you just wonder.
Like you said, mean-spirited people. And, you know, it's not leadership.
No.
Look, these guys are all on the corporate and, you know, wealthy special interest hamster wheel. You know, they're spinning on the wheel, doing what the corporations and, you know, the Koch brothers tell them to do.
Couldn't you picture what Chris Christie was like in high school, though? Couldn't you just...
I don't imagine he wasn't well-liked, but...
I think so.
He had to have been a bully.
He had to be a bully.
Right? I mean, you know, what...
The guy had a network.
And he's a rich kid. He was, you know, a spoiled rich kid. So, but you know, it's interesting too when you bring up the issue of the unemployment benefits and joblessness. And I was reading somewhere, you know, this is the 20th anniversary of NAFTA, you know, we have just absolutely bled manufacturing jobs in this country. And, you know, to think that they are now pursuing, there's a new trade bill in Congress. It's called the, I think it's called the Trade TPP. It's Trade Promotion Authority Bill, which would allow for more fast-track trade agreements. And, you know, I was reading that NAFTA has caused upwards of about nearly 700,000 jobs. And then China, I read, it was, this is on the AFL-CIO blog, it was since China came into the World Trade Organization, there have been 2.7 million lost jobs, and our trade agreement with Korea has killed 40,000 jobs. So, you know, this is scary stuff. These people lose their jobs. They're not getting rehired, and, you know, that kind of ties back into the unemployment.
The Trans-Pacific policy, the TPP policy.
Yes.
My God! Have you seen that? Have you heard and seen the? I posted it several times, several articles on Facebook. I don't know if you got it, but there were two commentaries on the thing, video commentaries on it, and it broke it down as to what it was. It was absolutely frightening, what it does. And this is this completely corporatizes the government, basically. It takes away what the WTO did, the World Trade Organization did. This goes further, way above and beyond, and just totally wipes out any all sovereignty. Okay, all sovereignty with regard.
Which is scary,
right? Yeah, with the United States,
yeah.
And it could cost upwards of 1 million jobs. Okay, in this country,
right?
Upwards of 1 million
right.
jobs. Okay.
At the time that we're cutting unemployment insurance and people can't find work. But I'm glad you hit on the issue about with TPP, because that's what bugs me constantly is the sovereignty. You know, these corporations and these politicians have got to be the most unpatriotic people.
Oh, they're traitors. Absolute traitors.
They are. They're traitors to the American people.
You know, they have no heart at all. They're bought by these companies.
This trade agreement is the problem with this one is that it what they're trying to do is they said they can only do it through this is their last chance because Obama is the great corporate president, okay?
Yeah.
And he owes it to all these guys, okay? And they know that he is the last chance for them to push this through, and they've done it so secretly, all right? They put it all together, and now it's gone into it suddenly through they put it into the Senate this week, and it's gone into it's going up for a vote, right? But they said they have to do it. It's a must win kind of thing for corporations because and if anybody finds out about it, you know, everybody will go ballistic. Okay, for what? You know, the unions got to go wild on this, and I haven't seen anything on the unions union pages about it.
Well, I think part of the problem, and that is, you know, something that we ought to be talking about more. I mean, I know the AFL-CIO has been talking about it, but I think part of the problem, guys, is that it just gets lost in all the bad news and all the fights that are going on about everything else from healthcare.
What they did is all of this bull about Bridgegate, right? I posted this video that showed this. What happened is under all the guise of Bridgegate, okay, they were able to the Senate. They pushed this bill into the Senate, okay, and it wasn't even talked about by anybody, okay. By anyone in the media, okay, all week long, right, and it's now hopefully will start being talked about, you know,
before
Obama
signs it. That's the operative phrase.
Yeah, it's like
it's extraordinary. And look, you know, it's both parties are to blame because they're both enthralled to the corporations. Bill Clinton gave us NAFTA, you know, he didn't have to do that.
No, he didn't. That was one of the last things he did.
And signed away our national parks.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
He sold all our
That's what scares me.
And ports, to China. To the UN.
Yeah. Now, and the problem with these trade deals is that they end up isolating, you know, workers like the ones we represent. So, you know, it's done more to destroy the manufacturing class than anything. And, you know, it's scary stuff. And I do believe it's unpatriotic. I think it's greedy and self-interested. And nobody's saying anything. I'm glad you are.
There's this article here that on the blog that on the AFL blog, CIO blog, it says 74,000 new jobs in December, jobless rate dips to 6.7% because people are dropping out of the labor force.
Just what you said,
that's right,
Mary.
They're giving up.
You know, you look. It must be very discouraging for people.
That's frightening. It is frightening. But if you have, I don't know, is there any good news coming up?
I was trying to think about that before you guys called me, and you know, and you don't want to sound like always grim, but you know, these are not easy times. You know,
very, very
I think
times
that, yeah, I mean, we had one bit of good news here in Connecticut, actually, which is this is another AFSCME union, but one that we're working closely with on legislation this year on hospital conversion, you know, when hospitals are converting to profit centers from nonprofit. So we have about 120 workers at Waterbury Hospital who joined our sister AFSCME union, which represents healthcare workers. So this is Waterbury Hospital, I should add. So we now have nurses and techs and technicians and RNs and so on at Waterbury Hospital, and that has
a great reputation, Waterbury Hospital.
Well, and it does, yes, it does, and I think it's also a reflection of the climate because, as you guys know, the hospitals are, you know, shedding their nonprofit status, and they're looking for legislation to kind of speed that process along. And to his credit, Governor Malloy vetoed legislation on hospital conversion last session. So we're actually going to be working with our allies trying to push legislation here in Connecticut that would require hospitals to really jump through a lot of hoops to demonstrate that converting to for-profit status is going to serve the interests of the community and of the patients. And Massachusetts has taken it farther. There's a referendum. There's a ballot question that would actually limit CEO pay, executive pay at these hospitals. So I think there's some, you know, there is some pushback going on in our communities. It just doesn't get publicized a lot, and it's certainly not on the scale of the attacks that are happening on us. But there are some good things happening.
That's good. There are some things.
We have to look hard.
It's hard to find them sometimes. I mean, these are really tough times. Very tough times.
They are. You know, they absolutely are. And I think that that's, I think people are frustrated. And I think that's why you see such low confidence or the lowest ever confidence in Congress and the debacle they put on with the sequester and with the government shutdown, you know, and by the way, that added, you know, I don't think any of the three of us are just like normally depressed. It's just, you know, the economy.
Well, it is.
ignore the
it was made worse. The government shutdown had a very negative impact, and that's made a bad economy worse.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
That's, you know, courtesy of the extremist Republicans in Congress, but. So I just think, you know, now it's just I think we need to see some stronger political grassroots stuff happening. I think this is the time, because if it doesn't happen, that's what scares me.
Well, I hope we have young people that will come forward and recognize, you know, the problems and not be buried in their cell phone and Twitter and Snapchat and all that kind of stuff. But use it effectively.
We're talking about young people there for a second. Let me go up to. I wanted to talk to you a minute about Obamacare. Right.
Please.
I just read today, this morning sometime, about the biggest problem is they've only got like 18% of the sign-ups are young people, and they need a minimum of 40% in order to make this whole thing solid. Solid, you know, make Obamacare not go under, okay? Because otherwise, it'll be bankrupt, and all of the insurance companies will be bankrupt as well, because
all they're going to
get is people like
older people
like us, you know, everybody over 50 years
right.
old.
Well, yeah, I mean the insurance companies aren't going to go bankrupt ever. Let's face it, they're they were dragged kicking and screaming into this process. And,
actually, no, they weren't. You know, this was a plus for them, okay? Because this was the only way they could ever get 100% insured.
I'm also talking about like with pre-existing conditions. I mean, you know, the Affordable Care Act makes it harder for them to cherry pick than they were doing previously. And what scares me is that they would just revert back to that.
They were going to all be subsidized by the
government.
Yeah, everybody's nervous about this, but I don't think you can say that it's going to fail. Certainly there have been a lot of forces out there trying to make it fail out on the right and, you know, in the business community. So there are obstacles, and you're right. They've got to juice up the registration dramatically, and having the website crash because they hired an incompetent private company to to oversee it didn't help. And I think there was a privatization outsourcing lesson that I hope somebody learned with healthcare.gov.
Vice president of that company was turned out to be Michelle Obama's roommate in college.
That
was kind of an inside deal, wasn't it?
The thing that annoyed me, it was a Canadian company.
And it was a Canadian company.
Canadian company, and, you know, this was, I think we talked a little bit about this when the Snowden stuff broke last year. I think we had a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, has anybody sort of like looked, you know, step back and look at the NSA mess with Snowden and look at what happened with healthcare.gov? And I'm not trying to get off the Obamacare thing, but it just, while it's in my mind, you know, I step back and I say, this is what happens when you outsource. This is what happens when you fail to hire your own people. Government should be doing these functions, not handing them out to private companies and compromising, you know, our security, our well-being, to line the pockets of these corporations. You know, maybe Obamacare would have worked if they actually had accountability by having it done in-house.
Well, here's another one. I posted this about maybe 4 or 5 months ago when it first broke, and it came up in the national news for just one day, and then it went away again, which is where the United States spent $500 million, okay, on helicopters they bought from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Right in Afghanistan, all right?
Yeah.
Paid the Russians $500 million for helicopters, and yet we're closing down Sikorsky, you know what I mean?
Right, you couldn't have given the business to Sikorsky in Stratford. That's crazy.
Does that make sense to you? Then they came on the news and they tried to say, we bought these helicopters because that's what we're using now.
Well, they were the best that we could get, okay, for our troops, okay?
Yeah. And we used them already.
But it's like it was.
I found that so insulting.
It was. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, when you turn your back on your own manufacturing base and your own workers, and, you know, and that's my problem. Whether they're government workers or, you know, they're defense industry workers, you know, this is, look, the U.S. government is, you know, subsidizes sweatshops. I mean, you know, we talk, you know, we tend to talk as a government out of both sides of our mouth.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it was like a couple of years ago. Well, this was before. Actually, this was under Bush, when Bush gave the contract for the presidential helicopter to be made in England. All right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You remember that? All right. Well, I mean, And it was just absurd, all right, that the contract would go to England, all right, rather than to Sikorsky that always made them. You know what I mean? And it just was mind-boggling.
And Martin Luther King's statue to be made in China.
To be
in
made
China.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
crazy. Yeah, you know, and not only did they use Chinese materials, they had, from what I read, they had Chinese workers, you know, illegals, who weren't, you know, given fair pay. So, you know, this is all bad stuff. You know, we turned our back on the American worker.
It goes right to the top, for crying out loud. You know, and it's just the American worker is just getting slashed and burned, you know, everywhere by his own government.
But unfortunately, what's happened is the guys like Christie and others are able to, you know, and that gets back to what we talked about at the beginning. You know, what the three of us are talking about isn't what's being discussed. It's like those damn unions, you know. and you know, they're really playing the scapegoat game, and unfortunately they're doing it well.
And they get a lot of play in the media.
Oh yeah.
That's what I'm saying, yeah, you know, that if you read the media around here, you know, it was state employee pensions are the cause of Connecticut's economic ruin, you know, not all the things we've just discussed.
No, that's right.
So the press is lazy and accepting, but they're largely a holding of the corporations.
Yeah,
oh, and the other thing that has worked very well for years is the American Postal Service, and just salivating to get that, you know, to make that.
Well, the Republicans.
Privatize it. You know, we're not going to be getting mail on Saturday anymore. And then they've withdrawn some kind of support for them. I didn't really catch it when I was listening to the news on the way home. You know, they're just going to drive that post office into private hands.
Yeah.
Which is a great democratic institution, you're right. And,
fabulous, I thought.
You know, and wait till you see what the costs are to mail letters and packages when they do that. And, you know, Congress, particularly under the Republicans, you know, they've really purposely starved the post office. And, you know, they're putting it in a position to fail so that it becomes privatized.
They want that. They desperately want that. They want anything that's successful. The post office was very successful. That's why they want it. They want Social Security because there's money there. They want that.
Oh, yeah.
That's
billions and billions of dollars.
That's what they go after.
Dollars are. Oh, man. It's sad. It's sad, Larry. This has been a downer for our first show.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. You know what? I'm energized. You know, this is why we fight, though. This is why we speak out and speak up. And, you know, Leo and Lila, we don't know any other way, so we'll keep doing it.
We appreciate that with you, Larry, and, you know, it means a lot to us because we can't help but get a little down, and we try to find some decent things to fight over that, to keep on going and give us hope there, but boy, I'll tell you,
it's tough, no doubt about it, but we don't know any other way, so... Hey, thanks for giving me my sick time, and I didn't fake it, so, unlike Chris Christie. So, look forward to talking to you guys. We'll talk soon.
Okay, take care, Larry, and stay healthy.
Yep, take care. You too. And keep up the good work. See ya.
Good night. That was Larry Dorman, Public Affairs Coordinator for AFSCME, Council for from New Britain, Connecticut, talking to us about what's happening in Connecticut and around the country in general. He's got a tough job, that guy. He really does. And he's everywhere around the state fighting for working people, union people, and trying to get people better wages and benefits. It's a tough slog today. These are hard times for working people.
Really are.
Very hard times.
So we appreciate the unions, and we keep plugging them every Wednesday. So and all week and, you know, forever. You know, they're the only guys that keep working for you.
If workers have any benefits now, it's because unions
got it for them.
Got it for them.
I keep getting it for them, and that's, you know. But anyway, let's. There's a couple of things we've got about 15 minutes left.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, something really burned my butt today when I read it. And a Supreme Court hands Monsanto victory over farmers on GMO seed patents and ability to sue.
Oh my God.
Yeah. All right. That's really sick. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld biotech. Now, you got to remember.
What a surprise.
Yeah, but Clarence Thomas, okay, worked for Monsanto, all right? And I think his wife works for Monsanto, all right? So it's like,
so corrupt.
I mean, he should have recused himself, but of course he didn't, you know. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld biotech giant Monsanto's claim on genetically engineered seed patents and the company's ability to sue farmers whose fields are inadvertently contaminated with Monsanto materials.
So they sue?
Ability to sue farmers whose fields are contaminated with Monsanto materials. So in other words, you know,
they didn't want it. Their field gets contaminated and
farmers,
Monsanto
farmers sued. Can't sue Monsanto, but Monsanto can sue the farmers. Okay?
Oh.
The High Court left intact Monday a federal appeals court decision that threw out a 2001 lawsuit from the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association and over 80 other plaintiffs against Monsanto that sought to challenge the agrochemical company's aggressive claims on patents of genetically modified seeds. The suit also aimed to curb Monsanto for suing anyone
whose field is contaminated by such seeds. The group of plaintiffs, which includes many individual American and Canadian family farmers, independent seed companies, and agricultural organizations, were seeking preemptive protections against Monsanto patents. The biotech Leviathan has filed over 140 lawsuits against farmers for planting the company's genetically engineered seeds without permission while settling around 700 other cases without suing. None of the plaintiffs are customers of Monsanto, and none have licensing agreements with the company. The group argued that they do not want Monsanto's genetically modified organisms and want legal protection in case of inadvertent contact with the company's products. The appeals court decision was based on Monsanto's supposed promise not to sue farmers whose crops, including corn, soybeans, cotton, canola, and others, contain traces of the company's biotechnology products. In a June 2013 ruling, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit in Washington, D.C., said it was inevitable, as the farmers argued that contamination from Monsanto's products would occur. Yet the appeals panel also said the plaintiffs do not have standing to prohibit Monsanto from suing them should the company's genetic traits end up on their holdings, because Monsanto has made binding assurances that will not take legal action against growers whose crops might inadvertently contain traces of Monsanto's biotech genes. Because, for example, some transgenic seeds or pollen blew onto the grower's land. The panel's reference to traces of Monsanto's patent genes means farmers that are affected by less than 1%. The plaintiff asked Monsanto to pledge not to sue, but the company rebuffed the request, saying a blanket covenant not to sue any present or future member of petitioners' organizations would enable virtually anyone to commit intentional infringement. Monsanto's GMO seeds is designed to withstand the company's own ubiquitous herbicide Roundup. Recently, questions have begun to arise from bioengineered seeds' resistance to pestilence, which has caused some farmers to increase their use of traditional pesticides. Monsanto never has committed, it never will sue, if our patented seeds or traits are found in a farmer's field as a result of inadvertent means, said Kyle McLean, the Monsanto's chief litigation counsel. I don't believe a word this company says, according to Reuters.
The lower
courts agreed there was no controversy between the parties, McLean added, and the Supreme Court's decision not to review the case brings closure on the matter. Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association President Jim Garrison expressed disappointment that the Supreme Court reaffirmed the previous ruling, refusing to hear the case. The Supreme Court has failed to grasp the extreme predicament family farmers find themselves in, said Garrison, an organic seed farmer in Maine. The Court of Appeals agreed our case had merit. However, safeguards they ordered are insufficient to protect our farms and our families. In addition to Monday's news and the appeals court decision against them, the plaintiffs, many of them non-GMO farmers who make up over 25% of the North American certified organic farmers, also lost a district court case. If Monsanto can patent seeds for financial gain, they should be forced to pay for contaminating a farmer's field and not be allowed to sue them, said Dave Murphy, founder and executive director of Food Democracy Now. In a statement, once again, American farmers have been denied justice while Monsanto's reign of intimidation is allowed to continue in rural America. Monsanto has effectively gotten away with stealing the world's seed heritage and abusing farmers for the flawed nature of their patented seed technology, said Murphy. This is an outrage of historic proportions and will not stand.
The case then is Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association et al. Versus Monsanto Company et al. Supreme Court case number 13-303.
That's a disgrace.
Isn't it, though?
Just an utter disgrace. It's going to get worse, folks.
Yeah, it goes on. It goes on. Well, here is another disgrace, but it's not on the same line. This is a little, this is kind of sad, very sad. Police send bomb squad to, hang on a second.
Teen's house.
Police send bomb squad to teen's house after he doodles a superhero with a flaming glove. Parents sue educators, police, and prosecutors for reaction to harmless drawings days after the Newtown, Connecticut massacre. On January 13, 2014, this was published, Newark, New Jersey, high school officials and police sent a bomb squad to a disabled student's home and arrested him after seeing his doodles of a superhero glove with a flame coming out of it. The boy's parents claim in court. The parents, KJ and TJ, sued the Greater Egg Harbor Regional High School District Board of Education. The school superintendent, principal, other administrators and teachers, the Atlantic County Prosecutor Office, the Galloway Police Department of Federal, holy crap, this went right up to the top. Their son, KJ Jr., has Asperger's Syndrome and Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. The parents say in a 36-page lawsuit, he is, however, a very gifted child in the areas of chemistry and engineering and likes to do experiments, fix things, builds, creates, and draw, according to the complaint. KJ expresses himself through his drawings. His parents say he doodles at school and helps him concentrate and focus in class. His IEPs, individual education plans required by law for students with disabilities, note that he doodles and draws in class. The fiasco described in this lawsuit began on December 17, 2102. No, that's obviously screwed up. 2012, 3 days after the massacre at the Newtown, Connecticut Elementary School. On December 17th, KJ's parents say his geometry teacher, a defendant, noticed a drawing of a spaceman that KJ was sketching during class. Late the next day, KJ was humiliated when he was called out of class by a school resource officer and the vice principal, who also served as a director of special ed, and KJ was taken to the vice principal's office and complaint states. KJ's principal, parents claim the vice principal manipulated their son into showing him the superhero sketch, coercing the boy to believe that he was genuinely interested in his artwork. The superhero glove had a flame coming out of it, was an updated version of a drawing he had been doodling with for 2 years. What's more, he did it at home, not at school, his parents say. And based solely on his coerced review of KJ's drawing in his sketchbook, he was held in the office and the vice principal defendant. And these guys are sick, freaking people. All right, Michael McGee called police, the family says. Sent to the family home, along with police with the fire department, emergency medical workers, and a bomb squad. The school also summoned bomb-sniffing dogs to go through the campus, causing panic. This guy is one sick, stupid-ass principal. Okay. Police who searched the family home found household items such as wires, thermochemical, and other switches, many of which were part of KJ's science and engineering homework, according to the lawsuit. The kid was then sent to juvenile detention center for 16 days, where he was strip searched and cavity searched. Upon release, he was placed on house arrest and had to wear an ankle bracelet for 5 months. He was cleared of criminal charges before trial. And the school tried to expel him and still refuses to let him return to class. The school district also harassed, intimidated, bullied, retaliated against, and cyberbullied KJ, his parents say in the lawsuit. The family seeks actual damages, statutory damages, and punitive damages on 12 counts, including malicious prosecution, intentional infliction of emotional distress, denial of education, discrimination, constitutional violation, deprivation of freedom, harassment, state and federal civil rights violations, and defamation. Defendants include school superintendent Steve Sicarello, Cedar Creek High School principal James Reyna, and a host of others. The family is represented by Julie Warsaw of Warren, New Jersey. Good for them. God bless them. I hope they win, and I hope they win millions, you know, for this guy, you know. And kick those assholes out. That is absolute insanity, don't you think?
Isn't that insanity? Leo, just let me say something.
What?
If it happened as that is stated.
Well, that's what they're stating.
Well, we don't know.
I mean, the guy was doodling?
That's what that says. If it happened like that, yes, it's crazy.
I mean, these guys should be sued and fined and kicked the hell out of that kind of education. They should be jailed. You know, for destroying this kid. You know.
And harassing the parents.
Oh my God.
A bit of an overreaction, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, these people are sick, you know. That's absolutely sick. Especially the kid's been in the school system for years, you know. Yeah. That's all part of the frenzy after Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
Everyone went crazy after that, you know. Everybody started getting crazier and crazier.
Common sense goes out the window.
The law went out the window. Anyway, it's all over, folks. So I want to thank Larry for being with us tonight and ask the union. We hope you got something from that. Hope you enjoyed the interview. So have a good night, everybody.
Good night, folks.
And peace be with you. Try to find the positive.
It's got
to
be.
It's out there somewhere.
We want to make more of it.
We're hoping.
We want to make more positivity.
Good night, everybody.
Night, folks.